Good morning. The Secretary General will update you on tomorrow's ministerial, and then, as usual, he'll be very happy to take your questions. Secretary General.
Good morning. Tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, NATO's foreign ministers will meet and address a wide range of security challenges. Violent extremism in North Africa and the Middle East, continuing instability in Afghanistan, and Russia's destabilizing behavior. We will discuss the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. This treaty eliminated an entire category of weapons, but it has been put in jeopardy by Russia. Russia has developed, produced, and deployed a new missile. It is mobile and hard to detect. It is nuclear capable, and it could reach European cities with little or no warning time. The United States is in full compliance with the INF Treaty. There are no new US missiles in Europe, but there are new Russian missiles. Russia must take immediate steps to ensure full compliance with the INF Treaty in a transparent and verifiable way. NATO is a strong advocate for arms control to make us all safer. We seek dialogue with Russia and we aspire to improved relations. But to make this possible, Russia must fully comply with its international commitments. Tomorrow, we will meet our partners, Georgia and Ukraine. They both face serious security challenges from Russia, and we will continue to give both countries practical and political support. Russia recently seized Ukrainian ships and sailors near the Kerch Strait. There is no justification for this use of force. We call for calm and restraint. Russia must release the Ukrainian sailors and ships. It must also allow freedom of navigation and unhindered access to Ukrainian ports in the Sea of Azov. Ukrainian vessels, military as well as civilian, have the right to navigate through the Kerch Strait and the Sea of Azov. Tomorrow night, we will address challenges coming from the Middle East and North Africa. We will discuss our support to our partners in the region. This includes capacity building, counterterrorism, and further developing our partnerships. We will discuss Iraq, where we are helping train local forces, and our experts are helping set up defense education facilities. This supports Iraq as it tackles terrorism at its root. So it will strengthen our collective fight against international terrorism. On Wednesday, we will have a meeting on the Western Balkans, joined by the EU High Representative Federica Mogherini. Because the region is of key strategic interest for both NATO and the European Union, we have seen Skopje's progress towards becoming NATO's 30th member. It is now for the authorities in Skopje to implement the name agreement. When that is complete, we will be able to sign the accession protocol. We will discuss taking the next steps in developing NATO's relationship with Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I expect ministers to endorse NATO's readiness to accept Bosnia's first annual national program. This is an important tool which can help the country implement political, economic, and defense reforms. It is now up to Bosnia and Herzegovina to decide to take up this offer. We will conclude the ministerial with a meeting of all nations contributing to the rescue support mission in Afghanistan. The challenge in Afghanistan is great, and allies have suffered fatalities in recent months, as have Afghan forces and civilians. We must continue to ensure that the country never again becomes a safe haven for international terrorists. Over the past months, we have stepped up our support with more forces and funding because the cost of leaving is bigger than the cost of staying. As you can see, we have a lot of ground to cover during our ministerial, and now I'm open to take your questions.
Okay, we'll go with Washington Post over there, yeah.
Hi, Michael Birnbaum from the Washington Post. On balance, is European security improved or worsened by the INF Treaty when only one side is observing it? Thank you.
The situation we have now is untenable. It cannot continue like that because no arms control agreement will work, will be effective if it's only respected by one part. And that's the reason why this was a main topic when heads of state and government met here at NATO in July. That's the reason why this was a main topic at the defense ministerial in October. And that's the reason why INF is once again a main issue when foreign ministers meet tomorrow. Because we are strong supporters of arms control, but only if it is balanced, verifiable, and respected. And all allies are concerned about Russia compliance with the INF Treaty. We call on Russia to comply with the treaty in a verifiable and transparent way. And we, of course, need to make sure that we are able to continue to keep all allies safe and secure. And we will take the necessary decisions to make sure that that's also the fact in the future, and that's the reason why we're going to have INF as one of the main issues to be discussed at the meeting tomorrow.
Wall Street Journal.
Dan Michaels, Wall Street Journal. NATO members have said that what Russia is doing, both with its new missile and in the Sea of Azov, in violation of agreements, illegal, but it looks like NATO and members are just offering strongly worded messages. Do you need to do more than just words? Is this a bit lopsided, actions versus words? Thank you.
So we provide strong political, but also strong practical support to Ukraine. Since the illegal annexation of Crimea, we have provided the support in different forms, help them with modernize their armed forces, command and control, cyber, hybrid, but also several NATO allies provide bilateral support with training and equipment. So NATO and NATO allies have and are providing strong practical support to Ukraine. We also provide, of course, political support, supporting their territorial integrity and their sovereignty, and we support the efforts to find a peaceful, negotiated solution, the Minsk agreements, and we support the efforts of the Normandy format. Then NATO has increased its military presence in the Black Sea region with a more naval presence. Last year, the number of days with the NATO ships or ships under NATO command in the Black Sea increased from 80 to 120. And there are also, of course, NATO allies which have deployed ships in the Black Sea outside the NATO framework, but still there are NATO allies. Then we have three littoral states, Turkey, Romania, and Bulgaria, with their naval capabilities. We have NATO air policing over the Black Sea region. And we have a new multinational brigade in Romania. We have more ISR, more intelligence, reconnaissance, and surveillance. So we are closely monitoring the situation. We have increased our presence, and we continue to call on Russia to release the sailors, release the ships, and to respect freedom of navigation and respect the right of Ukraine to move through the Kerch Strait and into the Azov Sea. We will assess closely Russia's, or we are closely monitoring and assessing Russia's military posture. And that's the reason why we have implemented the biggest adaptation, the biggest reinforcement of our collective defense since the end of the Cold War, with battle groups in the eastern part of the lines, with high readiness of our forces, and for the first time in many years, we also see that European allies and Canada are investing more in defense. We also, of course, assess closely Russia when it comes to intermediate range forces, and we will make the necessary decisions to make sure that we provide credible deterrence, credible defense, and that we keep all allies safe and secure.
Agence France-Presse. Yeah, over there. Up. Thanks.
Hello, good morning. Damon Wick, AFP. Well, what new practical measures can you offer to Ukraine to help them regain freedom of navigation in the Sea of Azov? You've mentioned several things that have already been put into place, but what new measures can you offer?
I think it is very important what we do, and that is that we provide a strong political and practical support to Ukraine, and that we have increased our presence in the Black Sea region, including in the Black Sea. And then, of course, it's a bit early for me to say what ministers will discuss at the meeting tomorrow. So I can report more about that after the meeting. But I expect allies to be very concerned about the situation and convey a very clear message to Russia of the importance of not using the fact that they have illegally annexed Crimea and then illegally built the bridge which links Crimea to Russia, and now using that bridge and the illegal annexation of Crimea to impede the movement of Ukrainian vessels to the Kerch Straits and into the Azov Sea.
Okay, we had National Public Radio. Yeah.
Thank you, Terry Schultz with NPR and Deutsche Welle. Do you believe that the U.S. is going to use this meeting to announce its formal withdrawal from the INF Treaty, or that it will wait until at least a couple of months from now till the defense ministers' meeting? And would 2 months make any difference in would a two-month wait make any difference in potentially Russia's understanding that this is going to happen and it needs to come into compliance? Or what kind of benefits would be made in giving it another couple months? Thanks.
The U.S. has briefed allies on their assessment about the new Russian missiles. They have done that extensively over months. They have briefed here at NATO headquarters. They have briefed in different capitals, and we have discussed the INF issue and the consequences extensively in NATO for a long period. We all know that the time is running out, that this is not tenable, that we have an arms control agreement which is only respected by one part. So we will, of course, discuss this at our meeting. I think it's a bit early for me today to announce what ministers will say and conclude tomorrow. But it goes without saying that all allies agree that this is very serious, because the INF Treaty has been so important for European security, abolished the whole category of weapons. And actually, I think that the deployment of SS-20s, Russian SS-20s in the 70s and 80s, and Pershing and cruise missiles by US and NATO in the 80s, shaped a whole generation of politicians in their understanding of security issues, including myself. And therefore, we also understand the seriousness of this treaty breaking down. The exact timing, the exact sequencing, and so on, I will not comment on that now. The only thing I will say is that the situation as we have it now cannot continue, and NATO allies are now discussing how to deal with this very serious issue.
Financial Times, third row.
Thank you very much, Michael Peel, Financial Times. To follow up on Terry's question, if Russia does not do what NATO and the US want on this, do you think that it would be justified and helpful for the US to redeploy or to deploy new missiles in Europe as in a response? And also, could you just speak briefly about Bosnia and whether you think that the decision to activate the map on that will complicate your discussions with NATO's discussions with Russia on other matters, and indeed perhaps disappoint Georgia, which has its own membership aspirations? Thanks.
NATO allies call on Russia to ensure full compliance with the INF Treaty in a verifiable and transparent way. We do that because we believe that this treaty has been important for our security, and because we are concerned about Russian compliance and concerned about the new missile they are deploying in Europe, aiming at able to reach European cities within minutes. We will, of course, and we are also, of course, assessing the consequences of what's now happening, and we will take the necessary decisions to make all allies safe and secure, and to make sure that we continue to have credible deterrence and defence. NATO will not mirror what Russia does, plane by plane, or missile by missile, or battle tank by battle tank. But we will make sure that we have the necessary capabilities, the necessary resolve, the necessary readiness to provide credible deterrence, because we know that that's the best way of preventing a conflict. And when the world is changing, when we see a more assertive Russia, when we see Russia developing new missiles, new nuclear weapons, increasing their capabilities, then we are responding, not by mirroring exactly what they're doing, but by responding in a measured, proportionate, and firm way. We have done that over the last years with the first deployment of battle groups in the eastern part of the alliance, increased readiness of forces, and now also investments in new military capabilities by all European allies and Canada. And then we will discuss this tomorrow, understanding that time is running out. This cannot continue, the situation we have now. On Bosnia, well, I expect ministers to agree that we will be ready to accept the first annual national program of Bosnia. Then it's up to Bosnia and to decide, Bosnia-Herzegovina, to decide whether they use this opportunity. But we expect us to at least express that we are ready to receive the first annual national program. For Georgia, I would like to say that the annual national program is something Georgia has had for many years already. So Georgia has all the tools they need to become a member. Now we are willing to provide an annual national program also to Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Okay, we'll go to Georgian TV in the front row.
Georgian TV company, Rustavi 2. I have two questions to Secretary General. First of all, about elections in Georgia. International observers' missions, they released critical reports, not about only elections date, but pre-election situation. So how NATO estimates these elections? And the second question, regard with the Azov Sea situation, how do you see Georgia's and Ukraine's place in Black Sea security? Thank you.
So, NATO has three member states as literal states to the Black Sea: Turkey, Bulgaria, and Romania. Then we have two partner countries, very close partners, highly valued partners, Georgia and Ukraine. And of course, we work with them all on issues related to Black Sea security. And I expect also the Black Sea security in general, but also the situation in the Sea of Azov will be discussed when we meet Ukraine and Georgia tomorrow. And we work with Georgia to modernize their armed forces, build their different military capabilities. We have the Training and Evaluation Center in Tbilisi, but we have also worked with Georgia on strengthening their coast guard. So NATO is also working with Georgia in strengthening their naval capabilities. We do so also with Ukraine. We have support from NATO when it comes to their naval academy in Odessa. So we work with the naval capabilities of both Ukraine and Georgia, showing that this practical cooperation has a value for the partners, but also for NATO, because when our neighbors are more stable, we are more secure, and therefore it is in our interest to work with Ukraine and Georgia in different ways, distinct, different partnerships, but two highly valued partners which have both suffered from Russian aggressive actions. I congratulate the new president of Georgia. NATO is not election, so we don't have election observers. So there are other organizations that do that, and I just think it's extremely important that election observers have full access, and that the concerns they have put forward are addressed in a transparent and open way.
Okay, we'll go to Radio Free Europe in the front row here. Gentleman in the blue sweater.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General. You just mentioned that the cost of leaving Afghanistan is bigger than the cost of staying in the country. My question is that why is it important for NATO to keep its presence in Afghanistan? Thank you.
It's important for NATO to keep its presence in Afghanistan because we have to prevent Afghanistan from once again becoming a platform to plan, to organize, to execute terrorist attacks against our own countries. It cannot once again become a safe haven for international terrorists. There is a high cost of staying in Afghanistan. There's a high financial cost for NATO allies, and there's a high human cost. We have fatalities also over the last weeks. But we have to compare the cost of staying with the cost of leaving. And if NATO and NATO allies left Afghanistan, we have to be prepared that there is a high risk that Taliban will come back and that different terrorist organizations will be able to gain ground and establish strong footholds in Afghanistan. For instance, we know that Al-Qaeda is there, we know that ISIS is there, and we know that ISIS is working with the core ISIS in Levant, and also they have networks in stretching into Europe. So this is about helping Afghanistan, but it's also about helping ourselves. It's about making our citizens more secure by avoiding that ISIS, Al-Qaeda, other terrorist organizations are able to really re-establish themselves in Afghanistan. We have to remember that we have been fighting ISIS in Iraq and Syria for years, and we have made a lot of progress. But we have to be sure that the caliphate ISIS lost in Iraq and Syria is not re-established in Afghanistan. And that's one of the reasons why we are there. And I visited Afghanistan recently, and I'm impressed by the commitment, the courage, and the professionalism of the Afghan forces. And we continue to train, assist, and advise them.
Okay, we go to Tolo TV. Gentleman with the red scarf here.
Thank you very much. I'm Parvez Shamal from Tolo News Afghanistan. There are two options and time frames for peace process in Afghanistan. The government says it will take 5 years to get some results, but the U.S. Trying to get results before upcoming election in April. If the U.S. efforts get some results before the election and it needs to postpone the election, will you support it? Thank you.
It is important that Afghanistan holds elections, because elections is, of course, key to any democratic society. Then I will say it is up to the Afghan authorities exactly to decide exactly when, taking into account the security situation and other issues. And I think also there are some lessons learned from the parliamentary elections, which should be taken into account when Afghanistan now is preparing for the presidential elections. I was assured when I visited Afghanistan a few weeks ago that the elections will be held and that they also will learn the lessons from the parliamentary elections. And again, I think that what we have seen is the strength of the Afghan security forces, because they have been able to provide security for the parliamentary elections, which was a very demanding and difficult task. And they did so with our train, but it actually was Afghan train and assistant advice, but it was actually Afghan forces that were able to do that.
Okay, we'll go to the gentleman in the front row here with glasses from Fyron.
Secretary General, you mentioned the accession process with NATO and Macedonia. The ball is, so to speak, rolling in Macedonian parliament concerning the constitutional changes. Are you convinced that if Macedonia delivers, the Greek side will deliver its part of the agreement? And you mentioned also safe haven. What about NATO credibility of safe havening a politician who is fleeing from justice? I mean about Nikola Gruevski case and Hungary.
First on Skopje. It's for the parliament and for the authorities in Skopje to make the decisions. I cannot guarantee on behalf of Skopje. That's for them to decide. But what we have seen is that the first vote in the parliament, where it was required two-third majority, it was a two-third majority for initiate this process. Whether there will be a two-third majority the next time when they have the final vote, that's not for me to speculate. But what I can say, is that as soon as the name deal or agreement is implemented, then we are ready to sign the accession protocol. And as soon as we sign the accession protocol with Skopje, the government of Skopje will start to meet at our ministerial meetings. And then we need ratification of all allies before we have the full membership. So I really hope that Skopje and the people of the country use this historic and once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to join NATO, and we are ready to welcome them as our 30th member. Then, to be honest, I didn't really get to the
law. Giving a safe haven to Nikola Gruevski in Hungary, NATO member country. Okay, yeah.
No, I think that's not for me to comment on. I think that that's an issue that has to be addressed between Budapest and Skopje, not for NATO.
We'll go to the lady in the middle there, yeah, from the Kosovo media. Yeah.
Yes, Secretary General, as Madam Mogherini will participate on the second day of ministerial, I guess the dialogue between Pristina and Belgrade will come up as an issue as well. Does NATO fear that it will face security consequences after the possible implementation of the agreement between both sides, which hypothetically might include border corrections?
So first, I... I think it's important to highlight how strongly NATO support the Belgrade-Pristina dialogue, because that's the only way to solve the outstanding issues. And we welcome the efforts by the European Union, by High Representative Federica Mogherini. I recently visited Belgrade, and one of my main messages there was the importance of the Pristina-Belgrade dialogue. Second, I think it is important that all actors refrain from provocative actions and provocative rhetoric to try to reduce tensions and to try to make progress. And NATO will continue to be present in Kosovo. We have our KFOR operation there, which is important for stability, and KFOR will continue to be impartial, helping to make sure that we have the necessary stability and security to see progress on the political efforts to find a political and negotiated solution. When it comes to potential border adjustments, I think that I will only say that we support the dialogue, and I hope that today we'll be able to find a solution which is accepted both by Belgrade and Pristina.
Okay, we'll go to Al Arabiya. Yeah.
Nordin Fridi from Arabi News, Mr. Secretary General. Good morning. Can you, you spoke very well and you elaborated on the INF Treaty, Russia, United States, Black Sea situation, the serious threats. What is your assessment to the violent extremism in North Africa and Middle East? Do you consider these threats as a military threat or mainly because of the weak states like some part in Libya, of course, maybe Tunisia, maybe Iraq? Is that, do you see military threats for the NATO security in North Africa and Middle East, or mainly because of the weak states there? Thank you.
When we look to the south, to the Middle East and North Africa, we see many different threats, and we see unpredictability and instability. So NATO has to be prepared for the unforeseen. We saw, for instance, not so many years ago that ISIS was able actually to establish control over large part of territory in Iraq and Syria, controlling 8 million people, and we started to speak about terrorist organizations with state-like capacities. And of course, ISIS was a real military threat to both Syria and Iraq. And that's also the reason why NATO allies and NATO has worked so hard to push back ISIS, and we have made real and significant progress in doing that. Then we have terrorist organizations, we have different kind of criminal groups, so we had to address all this variety of threats and challenges. We work also together with the European Union. NATO has naval presence in the Mediterranean Sea, providing support to Operation Sophia. And we also work with partners like Tunisia, Jordan in the region to help keep them stable.
Okay, we had a gentleman over there.
Yeah, Sead Numanovic, named Java Sarajevo. Does the invitation to the Bosnian authorities to submit this annual national program means the activation of MEP?
First of all, I think that we have now to wait and see whether Bosnia and Herzegovina uses this opportunity. We have given them an opportunity, then it is for Bosnia and Herzegovina to decide. Bosnia and Herzegovina already has a MAP. We are now ready to accept their submission of an annual national program. And it's for them to decide whether they do that.
Okay, we have a gentleman in the second row. Thank
you. Secretary General, Mykola Siruk from Ukrainian Daily The Day. Why, in your opinion, strong deterrence, strong defense as a core task of NATO from 2016 and meaningful dialogue with Russia do not bring any positive results? Instead, we see Russia more aggressive, and latest example of which was this Azov situation. What may and should NATO do more to convince Russia or use means, any means, Russia return to behave according to international norms? Because General Mattis, maybe you have read, has told, describing Putin, we are dealing with somebody whom we simply cannot trust. Please. Thanks.
You are right that NATO has a dual-track approach to Russia. Defense and dialogue, credible deterrence, credible defense, combined with political dialogue. And I strongly believe in that dual-track approach to Russia. because it is a very robust strategy, which is working in a way regardless of whether you believe that Russia will change in the near future or will not change in the foreseeable future. Because this combination of having both strength but also the openness for dialogue is able to accommodate different scenarios. And therefore, I welcome the fact that we have implemented the biggest reinforcement of collective defense since the end of the Cold War, that we continue to invest more in our defense capabilities, but at the same time that we have been able to have political dialogue with Russia. For instance, on the INF issue, the INF issue and the concerns all allies have about Russian compliance has been discussed in the NATO-Russia Council. We raised our concerns directly with Russia in the NATO-Russia Council a few weeks ago. So as allies, we have raised this issue with Russia several times, but also in the NATO-Russia Council. And we know that U.S., as part of party of this the INF Treaty, have raised it many times directly with Russia, calling on them to ensure compliance. So for me, there is no contradiction between strength and dialogue. I actually strongly believe that we need both. And as long as we are strong, as long as we are united, we can also engage in political dialogue with Russia. And let me add one more thing, and that is the following, is that even if you don't believe in an improved relationship with Russia in the foreseeable future, even then we need political dialogue with Russia to manage a difficult relationship. For instance, with more exercises, more military presence, higher tensions, we need to avoid incidents and accidents. And therefore, the fact that we use the NATO-Russia Council, the dialogue with Russia, to brief each other on military exercises, on military posture, to raise issues as the INF treaty, helps to manage a difficult relationship. Which is also important because the alternative is that incidents, accidents may happen and then spiral out of control and create really dangerous situations. So, for instance, add to that also that we have the military lines of communications, and I welcome that Sarkar, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, has met with Gerasimov, and they continue to have direct contact, which I think is useful for all of us.
Okay, we have one last question in front.
Thank you very much. Russian Radio Echo of Moscow, Alexei Gusarov. Mr. Secretary General, the President of Ukraine urged NATO to send battleships to the Sea of Azov. Will they be there, and how NATO responds to such requests?
So NATO has already increased our presence in the Black Sea. Significantly more, as an example, just significantly more days with NATO ships at sea in this year than last year, the previous year, and we have more. We are air policing. We have more ISR. We have more presence in the Black Sea in general, and we have. And we will, of course, closely monitor the situation in that region, also in light of what we saw a few days ago.
Thank you very much. This concludes this press conference. We'll see you tomorrow morning.